welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined today by Benji, contributor to Miles to Memories, moderator in the MTM Diamond Slack. Benji, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Sean. I just want to clear up front what many are either thinking right now or will think sometime in the next 45 minutes or so. You have scraped the complete bottom of the barrel here. I haven't fallen off a mountain. I haven't traveled to far-flung locales recently. You know, I haven't traveled every country. I'm just happy I was able to buy Cigaro's tickets off Ticketmaster this morning. So I'm good for the day.
Yeah, we got pretty far down on our guest list. Just kidding. I mean, you are one of the more prolific people in this hobby, and you basically lead a lot of the spending efforts and a lot of the stuff in the Diamond Lounge, including our Spending Time show, which is the most popular thing. People love that show, and you're always active in the Slack, and you know, you are underselling yourself. Let's just put it that way, as we started out, even if you haven't been to every country in the world.
You're too kind.
But we're going to talk about some fun stuff today. We're recording this a little bit earlier because I'm heading to Europe and I needed to record an episode so I can actually try to take a week off, even though I'll still be working a little bit, but not recording shows. So thanks for coming. And Joe is off this week. He'll be back with me next week and I'll recap that trip to Portugal and Paris, Disneyland Paris, the Main Street electrical parade in the sky. And more importantly, I guess Benji is trying to live on a schedule with school, right? These 1 week trips. I was talking to my brother the other day and he's like, where are you headed? You're headed out of town. I said, oh, we're headed to France and Portugal. He's like, for spring break, you're going there for a week? And I'm like, yeah, we're doing that. So I don't know. Maybe it's a little nuts.
Well, I'll definitely want to hear how it goes.
Before we get into the show, as a reminder, mtmpodcast.com. You can head there for links to apply for cards, anything you want to do. If you're listening to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, hit us up with a five-star review. That helps us out a lot. And everything we talk about, everything we do, milestomemories.com. You can find everything there. Our YouTube, our podcasts, all of Benji's posts, and even links to the Diamond Slack, which is unfortunately full at this point, but hopefully space will open up soon for people out there. We just opened up a couple slots and they were already gone basically by the time the show went live a couple weeks ago, Benji. So we're trying to not grow it too fast. That's our goal with that.
We're either doing something right or we continue to fool them, or both.
Well, we'll keep doing it. We're having a lot of fun. It's a great group. And yeah, we're looking forward. We're doing a meetup in Denver in May. You're not going to be there, but planning that right now. And that's a lot of fun. Looking forward to that. Well, let's talk about some big news. Now, we talked about it on the regular podcast this week or last week's podcast, I guess, for people listening. The Hyatt, you call it a devaluation. And I'm interested in that because they shifted categories again. And they've done this every year. Every program does this every year, right? For the most part. But Hyatt is perhaps the most regular. It's once a year we're going to get category shifts. And over the last few years, it's been very clear which direction those shifts have gone in. And they did a few years ago introduce that category 8. What was there, like 7 properties when they introduced it? And now I haven't looked, but I think it's probably 30 or 40. But this is a devaluation. I don't see it that way. I just see it as normal category shifting this year.
Let me step back a little bit. It's not a devaluation for me because I really don't patronize Hyatts as much as I used to under the Gold Passport program. But I keep it simple and consider it a devaluation if more properties are going down or going up than are going down. Obviously, for some, it is not. It might be good news or it might be standing pat. But nonetheless, perhaps it's more of the trend I'm seeing, not just this one. But over time, it seems like the last year and a half to 2 years, it's been a lot of bad from Hyatt more than good in some regards. But nonetheless, maybe I'm selectively remembering and I'm bringing my own confirmation bias to the table a bit here between them losing a few boutique brands to recategorizations. Like I said, or like you said, Sean, it feels like it just happened. Maybe it's because it did.
And they did do a lot of positive, right, in the way that they redid their program and added the ability to sort of switch guest of honor. I know some globalists weren't happy about that, you know, being able to have unlimited guest of honor before, and now it's sort of a cert, but you can give it to other people. You know, they did make those changes a few months ago and implemented them this year, more milestones for people. So I feel like on that end, they're driving things a lot better than some of the other programs. They have to compete and they're much smaller. And they did lose, you know, some stuff. They lost SLH, but they also gained a ton of brands. I mean, if we look at where their footprint was 5 years ago, even, it's a lot different. I'm not excusing them. I just think that the expectations that we're not going to see prices go up every year, especially when we live in a world where everything is more expensive. And we don't like to think of points prices relating to cash prices, but they do, right? And the other programs have shown us that. Hyatt, not so much. They don't have a revenue-based model, even with peak and off-peak, but there's no revenue-based model like their competitors. So they have to do this, I think, but it does suck. The Category 8 thing is the one thing I don't want to give them a break on.
And to your point there, specifically related to the Hyatt loyalists, you know, they're not going to feel this as much. Obviously, it's easier for me to call it a devaluation because I'm looking at the program from afar. I'm like Jane or John, free agent in many regards, and I don't have any status with them. So, of course, it's going to hit me more than it might hit some others. And I can totally get why people still see value in the program, both loyalists and non-loyalists alike. For people who keep up with cents per point value or valuations, it's not a huge thing for me, but some people it is, understandably. I mean, Hyatt continues to deliver, and let's not forget these other chains are doing, in essence, the same thing that Hyatt's done. They're just not as official with it, with their dynamic pricing, whether it's Hilton or Marriott or any of the other programs. Nonetheless, I don't want to overstate it, but, you know, my eyebrow wrinkled a little bit.
I hope Hyatt stays with their peak off-peak stuff instead of pure dynamic pricing at some point. I doubt we're going to stay with this. Eventually, I'm sure we'll get to dynamic pricing because that's the way of the industry, but it is nice to know that you have a maxed out amount and you can still get outsized value with Hyatt. Even this week, they debuted Rio in Las Vegas at a Category 3, meaning that, you know, on a weeknight where the rates are already pretty cheap, it's at 9,000 points a night, maybe not the best value per point. But if you go weekends where the rates can get crazy and you're maxing out at 15,000 Hyatt points a night, now you start to maybe have a scenario where it's good. And I think that's where the value at Hyatt is. But you do wonder, this is something you've wondered over the years, is why are people so loyal to Hyatt? I don't know. I mean, this is a year where I'm not going to have as much travel. And very honestly, I will not qualify for Hyatt Globalist for the first time in 8 or 9 years, unless I do spending on my card or supplement it in some other way, maybe some mattress runs at Rio. I don't know. Like, I feel at home when I go to a Hyatt. I like the way I'm treated. It's not always like a common sense thing. It's not the best deal all of the time, but I'm able to earn points fairly easily through Chase, and I think that's why I'm loyal to Hyatt. But why do you think people are? Why do you think it's so big in the community?
I think you hit something there with Ultimate Rewards. I really feel like it's optimized Ultimate Rewards redemption echo chamber, where you have with Ultimate Rewards a variety of partners, but, you know, for a good while it's been, okay, your best transfer partners as far as travel transfer partners are Hyatt, maybe, and then Southwest or maybe United, right? Particularly for maybe partner awards. And now it seems like it's really turned into, oh, de facto, just send them to Hyatt. I say the communal, we travel and points enthusiasts, it becomes quite convenient to just say, oh, I love Hyatt and I get great value there from a cents per point perspective. And then, oh, by the way, I'll put all this effort to manufacturing status to make the most of those stays on Ultimate Rewards currency. In reality, I think we need to be a little more intentional of, does Hyatt work for us right now? Is this something that I need right now? For many people, it's going to be yes. But I would say if people step back and critically think a little bit more, they might reevaluate maybe some different ways of redeeming with Ultimate Rewards.
And there's nothing wrong with not wanting to be treated special when you're on property, right? If you don't value breakfast, if you don't care about room upgrades, there's really nothing wrong with not having elite status. But in this hobby, it seems to be a big focus. And I think it's just because everybody they're such travel enthusiasts that we like, you know, novelty. And I think novelty in flying first class or novelty in flying business class or the service that you get or the suite upgrade or the lounge access. And admittedly, it's a lot more special, I would say, when you're newer to the hobby. And I don't mean that getting lounge access isn't special, but as anybody knows, when you do something 100 times, it's less special on the 100th time than it was on the first time. And I feel like that's the case with all hotel elite status with me. I know when I first, you know, got into the hobby over a decade ago, the first time I'm getting an upgrade, you know, it was magic. In fact, back then, this is 2013, I took my wife to Hawaii. And back then, you could do a challenge with Hyatt where you got temporary diamond status and you didn't need to do anything for it. They gave it to you for 90 days, I think. And I used that to time it with the trip to Hawaii. So we got lounge access, special treatment at the Hyatt Regency in Maui. And it was just special. And I think that's probably what hooks a lot of people is that first experience where you feel special and then you want it to keep going.
Oh, yeah, I can totally get that. I remember when, you know, Hyatt was shiny and new to me. And one of the odd things I remember, it's silly what you can recall or what sticks out. I remember that first packet from Hyatt Gold Passport of, you know, explaining the benefits. And there might have been a few tchotchkes in there. And I mean, this is going back, you know, 15, 16 years ago. And it's all silly. It's all marketing, but they put more effort into that than some of the other chains did. And, you know, obviously I thought, you know, they're going to put that effort into that. They're going to do that with their properties as well. Leading, you know, into that and staying there for years as a diamond, I think was the top tier in Hyatt Gold Passport. I loved it. I loved all the confirmed suite upgrades, particularly at Park Hyatts. And, you know, the very liberal breakfast policy, which still continues to this day. So there's great stuff that's still alive there.
But alas, there is a lot more hotels in the world. There's a lot more brands. There's a lot more places to stay, better locations if you're in a city that has a Hyatt, where it may not be ideal and you're staying somewhere that's not. I mean, I'm going to Lisbon and there's not a lot of great options. I looked through all the programs, so it's not like I just went Hyatt only. But the Hyatt Regency Lisbon looks like it's in a beautiful sort of area, but not in the center. And that was, you know, a decision based on being able to get the suite based on occupancy and that feeling like the right hotel. But I feel like a lot of people just go right to Hyatt. They don't look elsewhere. And I haven't done that through having to travel so much the last couple of years. I didn't really have that option of being Hyatt only. So I'm always searching Hilton, Marriott. Sometimes for some cities, search choice, Benji. I haven't found anything other than that beautiful Clarion in Copenhagen to book yet. But you're a big fan of Choice Hotels. And I think I talked on the show when we got back from the meetup in Orlando. You stayed at a Choice Hotel there, a Comfort Suites, I think. And it was brand new and it was beautiful. And people shouldn't pass on that one either, considering how easy it is to transfer city thank you points.
Indeed. And that's a great rate. I think City to Choice is still one of the best, if not the best, transfer partner out there as far as hotels go for thank you points. That's probably not sticking my head out too far there. It is a great partner. I like the fact that with spanking new properties, it's a fairly safer bet. Choice can be trickier when you're dealing with more dated properties. Obviously, particularly in Europe, there are some great options as well. But there's one thing I love about Choice that you probably don't see coming. And what that is the barrier to entry for redemption. And what I love there is the 100-day rule for award redemptions, where basically you can't book an award stay at a Choice property earlier than 100 days before the stay begins is, I think, the gist of it. And
with an award only, right? With cash, you can book them.
Oh,
yeah. So they're really, they're trying to block out us and trying to let the hotel sell the room for cash before they let us in. A lot of people in the hobby hate that. And I'm not a fan of it either, but you think it's a benefit.
Well, selfishly, I love it because with a flexible schedule and being able to move around that however basically we want to, it can work for us. And, you know, maybe I'm squinting to see this, but I perceive that as sort of a non-starter for many out there. And I don't have the competition going for the award space, in my view, in my estimation, with Choice that I do with other programs. And by making it a little tougher, I'm also confident that, like I said, I'm not competing with as many people, but also there's more options out there and more sweet spots, dare I say it. I'm not a big fan of that term, even though I just used it. So that's something, you know, I oddly hope they keep. Obviously, we're probably overdue for some changes since they brought on the Radisson Americas properties, so they might get rid of that. But in the meantime, I love that I'm not having to compete with as many people.
And they have Circus too, so you can't downplay the importance of their Las Vegas portfolio with Circus.
Yeah.
No, but people should do this. And I really want, and I've said this over and over on the show, so I'm trying to make this a point of mine, is use different programs, search different programs, widen your play, right? I mean, widen yourself to get different elite statuses. And I don't necessarily mean go out and earn them. There's plenty of options. Jump on every opportunity to match. If it makes sense to have a credit card like the Hilton or Marriott cards that give you, you know, quote unquote status that gives you breakfast, you know, either platinum with Marriott or diamond or gold with Hilton, then do it and it'll make your travels a little bit better. But that's our sort of take on elite status. You don't like it. You don't like the people pursuing it. I kind of have my foot in both doors. But again, the last few years, I've traveled so much that I've been able to do it. I feel like my sad thing for me this year, Benji, is that Hyatt probably won't run any promos for globalists just because of my luck. Because the last 3 years, right, there's been all kinds of promos. People were getting globalist easy. You had the MGM properties in Las Vegas to stack up your nights. And I didn't need it. So I was hitting 60 nights without any problem. And then the irony of it all, this year, probably won't hit 60 nights, and then I don't have all of those easy options, but maybe something will come. One other thing you've written about a lot on the site is using FHR and even Chase Luxury Hotel Resort Collection, although I think mostly you use FHR because of some of your credits that you have through Platinum cards, but using that to sort of make your own elite status. And you've been reviewing a series of hotels that are, you know, probably off the radar for a lot of people, so they can check out those posts. But how has that been working out for you? How have you found those experiences of a la carte elite status?
Well, I do like the fact that it's basically creating your own elite status for a given stay, right? Obviously, the hotel credit from the Amex Platinum and obviously the Chase Travel credit with the Reserve help with those respective programs. But what I like there is, you know, you're not having to jump through all these different hoops. You referred to all the different things people do for Hyatt status and other status. But I like plays that are a square deal in terms of status. Like, I'm happy to buy into top tier Hilton status with the Aspire, which I did years ago, and somehow I'm still hanging on to Diamond. I think that's through spend on other cards. But when it's fairly straightforward, okay, the time isn't so much the aspect at play here, it's the cash. It's like, okay, I'm paying this annual fee for this status or this benefit. This is what I get in return. It's fairly, you know, straightforward there. Not that I'm the most creative individual, but, you know, I'm fine with that. And with getting back to Fine Hotels and Resorts and this newer Chase program, you know, I like the fact that you see a property you like to visit, it can be a distinctive one, and there are very many in those two programs. And for that, you know, one night, two night, three night, whatever stay, you can basically create your own elite status. Your breakfast is included. You get an early check-in, you get a late check-out, you get a quasi upgrade, at least most of the time. And it didn't take that much effort beyond agreeing to the terms of that credit card or following instructions. It wasn't like a Charlie Day board from It's Always Sunny trying to connect all the different dots and all those types of things. So I like those, and they are getting better in my view, adding new properties all the time. Recently stayed at the Bowie House in Fort Worth, which is part of the Auberge Collection, which is an interesting group of properties primarily in the Americas, and Pendry in DC, which is part of obviously the Pendry Hotels, offshoot of Montage. And while the credits aren't growing, as long as you have some flexibility, you can significantly discount a stay at a very distinctive property with either of these programs. And Chase is even more exciting in my view, because you can redeem Ultimate Rewards points with a 50% extra value via the Chase Travel Portal to book their collection of properties with those benefits. So I think that's huge.
That was great when Chase added that. And yeah, you're right. I haven't been searching that. I used to search it all the time, especially for Vegas stuff. And I haven't been on there nearly as much lately. And it's a great ability to do that. I just think back to last year. I stayed in a lot of Hyatts. I stayed in a lot of other properties. And probably my favorite stay of the entire year was an FHR stay at the Four Seasons in Macau. It's Four Seasons. Okay. You know what you're going to get at Four Seasons. It should be good. But as you point out, early check-in, late checkout, tons of credit, even an upgrade to a junior suite. And the hotel itself is providing the service to every guest that you would, special service that you would want as a top tier elite. So you're getting all of that. I didn't leave that hotel. Like I said, it's probably my favorite stay of the entire year, including every Hyatt that I stayed in. So yeah, it's nice to do that. Now you do pay cash, right, for FHR. But as we said, there is that $200 credit with Platinum cards, personal Platinum cards. And there's a lot of people out there who have those because of the no lifetime language offers or targeted offers that they've gotten. And Benji has done a really good job of finding good properties at good deals. Like, there's a whole strategy to hacking FHR to find sort of the right places and times and prices and make it work where you're not just, okay, well, there's an $800 hotel and I'm getting $200 off. You know, I'm still paying $600 out of pocket. You're not really doing that.
Correct. And it involves a little bit of extra work, but that's part of the process, right? And I guess that leads us back to the process of elite status in general. You know, if you're enjoying the process of what you're doing, that's great. I loved spending my way to executive platinum status under loyalty points, the diabolically genius American Airlines scheme. So if you're enjoying the process of obtaining and obviously using that elite status, more power to you.
So to sidetrack a little bit, I did want to talk to you about AA loyalty points for everybody, because I know you've talked about it before on the show, or we've mentioned your posts about it and you continually update on those. But what is the latest with your AA loyalty point sort of pursuit, and how has that changed over, let's say, the last 2 years since you sort of dove into it? Have you evolved? Are you still going as hard as you were? And are you still trying to earn executive platinum status going forward?
Well, much like anyone else's pursuits, they're very dynamic. They change based on the situation, not only on the travel side, but also on the advanced spending side, right? You know, where if I have more opportunities to spend, I am more likely to pursue loyalty points. Right now is one of those times. I didn't expect to be in that situation again last year after 2 years ago, but I ended up in it surprisingly, and I was able to get to top tier there with the Executive Platinum, obviously not Concierge Key. That would involve, you know, who knows how much spending. That said, I'm there right now. We'll see where things go. Things can die and change at any point, and I have to reevaluate. But my tried and true priorities of primarily building as many bank points and cashing them out, and then, oh, by the way, if I have more opportunities doing things with the hotel and airline currencies, I will try to pursue those if I have space and the opportunities to do so.
One area that a lot of other podcasts or other blogs or social media in the space, they don't talk a lot about cashing out bank points. And unfortunately, here we do. And I would give you credit for that a lot more than me. You've been pushing on me for years to cash out my points. And I have, right? I've cashed out in the last year and a half, 1.6 million, or maybe even a year. It's just been a year. I cashed out a million about a year ago. And then just in the last month or two, I cashed out 600,000. And that's not a ton, right? There's people doing crazy numbers, cashing out crazy numbers. I still have some because I'm not like willing to give them all up like some people like you would. And, you know, so I'm not completely evolved in that way. But there are people out there who just absolutely will not look at their bank points as cash. And that's unfortunate for the value perspective. When I'm spending Hyatt points, I have to look at what the value of those ultimate rewards were, right? I mean, that is the cost of me to stay in that room.
I guess there's a balance there. You know, there's the fun of just treating everything as funny money, so to speak, not even money perspective, but as a currency that's just for travel, right? But I can't ignore the fact that there is obviously a cash money value to most all these currencies, or there's the opportunity cost, dare I say it, of choosing an airline or hotel point currency over cash. Fortunately, I'm in this situation, and many other people are, where they can have it both, right? I obviously focus on bank points for obviously certain things that don't have anything to do with travel. The masses have been preconditioned to primarily think of rewards as travel rewards. So it's a travel rewards hobby to them. I consider it more of a rewards hobby. And then under that overall umbrella, there is a significant portion that is travel rewards. But then there's a space of day-to-day rewards, everyday rewards, where I can obtain solid values and I don't have to wait for just some random trip to benefit from these rewards.
Yeah. And if you're at this point where you're listening to this podcast, where you're in all of this content, then you are probably advanced enough to understand the difference there. And, you know, you're not doing yourself any favors. I've said this a bunch of times, but a conversation I had a couple of years ago with one of the biggest bloggers in the space, where he told me bank points were not worth money. They were his travel funds. There was no cash value. He was not going to take into account the cash value. And there's a lot of people there. You should absolutely not be like that, because, you know, you're just long. I guess maybe ignorance is bliss, Benji. And I don't need to like think about what the cash value is. It hasn't stopped me from going, because I travel and it's a priority for me. And that's why I started doing all of this. But as you say, you have the ability at times to earn more points, and then you don't always need them. And I've talked over the years, I really struggle with, you know, wanting to have balances and feeling the comfort of that. And there's people like you who don't care about that. That motivates you to get more. I know Mark has written and talked about that in the past too, burning everything down so he can rebuild and get the motivation to do it. And that's good. And in the end, for somebody listening, like if you have the time and the ability to do that, and you could put extra money in the bank, or who knows, I know people in the hobby who have renovated their houses, who have bought cars, who have done, you know, bought things that they want, not spent it on retirement or anything, but said, okay, travel is a hobby of mine. Riding a motorbike is a hobby of mine. I'm just making that one up. But, you know, I know people who have bought big things with their money just for personal fun. So you could really do anything. It's well beyond, like you said, it's rewards, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, not to get too touchy-feely here, as if we haven't done that already, but you almost think of it, okay, life goals. Okay, what do I want to accomplish in my life? And really, how can rewards be leveraged to get you there more quickly or fulfill you in that pursuit? Prioritize those, and where travel fits in, plug in your rewards there as well. But there's plenty out there unrelated to travel, and your rewards can augment your life in so many different ways.
And that's really the benefit of this hobby these days is, as we've seen, I mean, the space 10 plus years ago when I started writing about this is just so different. It's such a bigger market. There's more people getting cards. Everybody on the street knows what credit card rewards are. I think that's largely because of the points guy. It became such a big dynamic force of a brand that it sort of penetrated everywhere and everybody's mind. So at least on some level, they get it. And more people are making sure they get their 2% rewards card or whatever they're doing. But that just opened up more opportunity, I think, for those of us who want to really not playing a game, right? But just really know the rules and kind of open your mind beyond what the banks are telling you. The truth is that this market growing and getting to where it has been so profitable for the banks. They're printing money because of the interest, because of the fees. And we already know, like, step one in this hobby is don't pay interest. Make sure that you're not participating in that. But, you know, they also make money on your spending, which is good. If you just learn all the rules and all the intricacies, just like with anything, right? Any rewards program, any hobby, the more you know, the better you're able to navigate it. And so this huge, like, carrot that they're dangling of travel rewards for everybody, it's driving them to pay more fees, more interest, more interchange fees, all of that. You're kind of doing some of that too, but you're able to get it back and come out ahead on your side if you play the game right. And I don't mean this as a game. I just mean study the rules, what's out there. There's no game. There's no doing anything wrong. There's no, you don't have to be shady. You don't have to do anything you don't want to. Just learn what the ecosystem is, and I guarantee you that you can come out ahead. And the banks don't care about that as long as you're staying within the rules, because again, the 99% of everybody is generating them a ton of money. They know there'll be 1% that sort of maximizes everything.
Yeah. And I guess I will say lastly on this topic that there's a balance between questioning the norms. You could do that with anything, but in terms of earning and redeeming, and with that as a backdrop, look how you can apply that mindset to following instructions. And I firmly believe in many ways life is just an exercise in following instructions and wisely following those instructions for more immediate benefit for yourselves and the ones around you as well. And you can really do big things.
The big lesson I've learned from Benji over the years, just open your mind and start challenging yourself when people are doing things that you're not. Not that you have to do everything, but it's okay to consider doing everything. It's okay to, like, this person's cashing out points, and then to really think about whether that would work for you instead of saying, no, I don't want to do it because it's my travel fund, or this person's doing that, and say, okay, well, let me see, will that work? Okay, it doesn't. But, you know, don't, I just don't like the ignorance is bliss. And again, when I started all this, all my travel rewards were my travel funds. I used them for travel. I didn't cash out points. It's not like I was above any of this. It's just evolving over time. And I guess being able to earn more points over time helps too with reselling and other ways I've been able to generate points. All these generous targeted offers from American Express that I've received, being able to pick up 150K, you know, with just a sign-up bonus or more sometimes, which, you know, that's real money too if you cash out with a Schwab card. And, you know, that all works out really well. I've done well with the American Express stuff. I'm still trying to get myself around on Chase stuff. I feel like I need years and years and years of Hyatt points. And so I'm still, like, a little uneasy with that. So not fully evolved yet.
Yeah. And that's fine if you or many others listening don't ever get to that point of thinking beyond travel for their final redemption. But I would recommend being reflective and considering other options beyond travel. I bet many are out there and are curious about it. And I think even if you come to the conclusion after that reflection of, oh, you know what, those other non-travel things, they aren't for me. Well, you know what, you've scratched that itch going forward. You feel more confident and, in an odd way, more able to enjoy that travel reward because you've been intentional and very mindful of it being the optimal redemption after you've considered other options.
Considering it isn't necessarily doing it, and a lot of people don't want the stress of all of this, totally get that. Do it at your own level, but be aware of it and, you know, how you're fitting in with it. And I still think it's great if somebody goes on one trip a year, even if it's a weekend trip and it's paid for with miles and points, and that's all they want to do, and it works for them. And you can start there and you can go wherever you want. That's really, I think, the point of all of this, is letting people know that the opportunities exist. And that's what the Diamond Lounge does is such a good job of. I've noticed people come in and they're really open their mind up to possibilities and just having those conversations with people about the hobby. I don't know, just sort of diving in, and you watch people's minds sort of open up and blow up with that. But switching away, since there is no space in the Diamond Lounge, should I open up a couple spaces, Benji, for when this show goes live?
My lame joke is you might have a few open up after hearing me on this podcast from people dropping out, and they'll just, you'll be able to reuse those. But we always are looking for people that are interested in pushing further in all the different aspects. So that could be worth doing.
So as we move on with the show, you've written a lot about the Capital One Lounge in DFW, I think, but you recently went through there again. And in a note you sent me, you said it didn't absolutely suck. Now, I've been there a couple times. I love that lounge. In fact, I had to spend almost 5 hours there last year during a infamous AA delay, which every time I go through DFW on American Airlines, I get delayed. But it was one of the nicer 5 hour stretches when you're delayed and exhausted I had to spend. But it had been getting overrun in lines and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, what did you have to say about that? Because I also want to ask you about, you got to go to the DFW employee store, which I'm super jealous of, which I'm really bearing the lead. That's why I'm asking about all of this.
Nerd alert to that, but we'll get to that. I hadn't been to the DFW Capital One Lounge in maybe a little over a year, maybe a year and a half. And since then, I'd been to the Dulles Lounge location a few times, which has just been overrun. Not in a particularly great location. The time I was there, it was just unpleasant as far as, you know, lines everywhere. And just like, I almost considered going out in the terminal. I had never considered that in a lounge before, but I almost did. I didn't do it. But nonetheless, expectations going back to the DFW lounge were low, even though I had a great first visit or two there a year and a half ago. But nonetheless, it was a nice surprise that, you know, things can be busy. It was anywhere from 75 to 90% capacity as far as butts and seats when I was in the DFW location this past trip. But it was a fairly well-oiled machine where, you know, they seemed to be well-staffed. Everything was stocked. They were busy, but both can be true. A place can be busy and also be a pleasure. And, you know, I've known that in, you know, Sky Clubs or, dare I say it, a well-placed Centurion Lounge here or there. Hadn't experienced that in the Capital One Lounge yet, so I was happy to be proven wrong there. You know, I'm just a lowly authorized user on a venture card, so they don't care about my opinion, obviously, for many reasons, that being one of them.
Do they still have the cake pops on your way out? That's the most important thing to me.
I did not see them. And speaking of things they didn't have, probably my favorite lounge item in the past several years, the BLT sandwich. They don't have those right now. The takeaway BLT sandwich from the DFW Capital One Lounge, they do not have that. Maybe it's a seasonal item. Maybe it might come back, but I was a little bummed they didn't have that. And the takeaway beverages, it's just mineral water now. So those were some of the austerity that's kicked in a little bit there. Unfortunately, they haven't relocated the bathrooms in that lounge either, as if they could do that. I think that's the worst bathroom location in any lounge I've been to, maybe ever. Right up
front. Yeah, aren't those all individual stalls that they have to clean after every single use? Or at least I saw a lady, her job was to go in after when I was there, and she just stood outside the doors, and then when somebody would come out of one, she would go in to make sure it was clean. Kind of similar to what you get in an international business class lounge, but you're right, it was right in the hallway, and there was people waiting, and it was just a very awkward kind of space, not very comfortable. But I like the lounge layout, you know. Bathrooms, I'll take bad bathroom location as long as the seats are good and the food is good and everything else.
Well, I tell you what, I almost think you could grab a cake pop from the front desk of the lounge as you're touching the bathroom handle. Anyway.
Now everybody just tuned out because you disgusted them. So how was the DFW employee store? What is that? I imagine it's for employees of airlines and people who work there and they get to buy all kinds of cool merch or something. What is it?
Well, the name happily means nothing because anyone can shop there. Anyone who gets access to the terminal, that is. You don't have to be a DFW airport employee. It's right outside gate C2, not in a part of the airport I go to that often. It's sort of a forgotten little corner. People are always on their way somewhere else. But I saw this sign that said DFW employees store, and I thought, man, that's so random. And then it said on the side, it said like all are welcome or all open to the public. And you
bad branding, because initially everybody's going to just think they're not eligible.
Maybe it's one of these things like where it's like trying to sell cars. They're trying to say you get the employee rate. Maybe you feel great. You're shopping at a store only for employees, for perhaps. At any rate, you walk in and it's basically almost like a swap meet or garage sale of just randomness. Of course, plenty of American Airlines stuff in, you know, just I caved to a retro American Airways t-shirt there, and more coasters than I'd ever seen, regardless of topic. But these were just related to aviation and airline stuff. They have like a model Spirit plane, like as if you want to display a Spirit plane, which I thought was interesting.
You got Frontier? Now we're talking.
You know what? They may have all the nondescript black work shoes that every airline employee seems to wear. It's like there's a shoe store inside it. Just a collection of random items, dust, interesting people. I loved it in a weird way. And you get a good deal. Like things are relatively reasonably priced there. And that's how you know you, I don't want to say have a problem, but you're really into this angle of things. I don't even know if you say av geek or whatever you say, but I can appreciate the sort of specificity of our shared hobby more than anything with this. And it was fun to just look around.
It sounds awesome. It sounds like something I would like. Unfortunately, every time I fly out of DFW, it seems like they put me in the C gates instead of the D gates, which are much better, in my opinion, a much better place to fly. Not only are the lounges there, but just the space in the gates is better. But the C gates are much tighter. Got to take the train, but I'm always there, so I'll have to go over there and check it out. Plane models, people love them. I've never been like attracted to them, but when we flew Japan Airlines business class last year, they gave Ellie a little small model of the 787, and she still has it, and she loves it. She, you know, has it on display, and it actually became something that she carried throughout Asia to Europe, like through all of our travels. And, you know, I get why people like the bigger ones. And who wouldn't want to commemorate Spirit Airlines? You know, yeah. Spirit was my very first international flight. I flew LA to Guatemala in 2007. It was a different Spirit Airlines then, though. They were a budget carrier, but they hadn't quite gone ultra low cost. They still gave free water or something. I remember you can still get water on a plane. People don't know that, but they have to give you water. They won't offer it to you. But back then, Spirit actually walk down the aisle with a pitcher of water and plastic cups. So it's gone downhill quite a lot since then.
So yeah, I guess I was a bit quick to call your Spirit baby ugly there, Sean. But you know, the collection of luggage tags there, that's another thing, just random stuff. I'm sorry I didn't get you a Reno Air luggage tag. I didn't even know Reno Air existed. Someone apparently wants an America West baseball cap that's out there. You know, if you like specific plane models, there's like American Airlines 787 hat, and you feel the need to display that. You can have some fun in there. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure there's people booking their tickets right now.
I'm sure.
That
I'm
is
sure.
The thing in this hobby, though. There are people who, you get nerdy about stuff. I've never been big about wearing brands around. As I say, anybody who's seen me in person at meetups or anything knows I'm an Adidas hound, so I shouldn't say brands, because if it's Adidas, I'll wear it. And I also wear other stuff. But as far as like Hyatt or like wearing a Hyatt t-shirt or wearing, I don't know, I don't relate to brands in that way where I'm that proud. I don't care if you give me a free t-shirt, whether I'll wear it either. You know, you know, all the swag that you get, I don't care about that. But people love that stuff. And admittedly, the nostalgia gets me a little bit. I do wear like nostalgic video game, like even nostalgic Star Wars shirts once in a while. So yeah, anything with like a nostalgic 80s looking logo, that's where you'll find me.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, I succumb every now and then, including at this store. And yeah, I fell for the 1930s nostalgia, not so much 1980s this time, but 1930s nostalgia.
When everything was great on the airplanes and only one out of every four crashed. So,
and oddly, no one was wearing a t-shirt.
Yeah, no one was wearing a t-shirt. Have you seen the chairs on those old planes? They look like folding chairs that they put in, like the very first planes from early passenger aviation. And they weren't folding chairs, but they weren't like that. And then by the 50s, you have, you know, these ornate first class setups and full meals and roasts served on planes and
ashtrays everywhere.
God. I mean, just the smell of a roast plus, you know, smoke in the cabin. What do you think? Like 80-90% of the people smoked in the cabin back then? It had to be nuts just to deal with it. By the time I flew, I think my first flight was in the early 90s. I think it was already banned. So I don't think I've ever been on a flight with smoke. Did you ever get to experience that?
I vaguely remember it, that tinge of smoke. My lame joke was going to be the one person not smoking was the guy playing the piano in the back. But that guy was probably smoking too on the plane.
Yeah, those first generation 747s with the lounge. Ugh. I mean, the only thing that comes close is the A380. The 747 had a full lounge dedicated on the upper level, I believe. And that was just the lounge. So there were no seats there and it looks incredible, depending on the airline that configured it. But yeah, the A380 with Emirates, that's the modern day equivalent, I would say. Get in the bar, especially if you're in first class, you get the shower and you feel somewhat fancy like they did back then. But today you can wear a t-shirt, Benji, and I appreciate that. An Adidas t-shirt even.
There you go. Well, I will say you haven't lived until you've taken a shower on a moving train, specifically Amtrak. So I'll leave it there.
I haven't done that. I've only done Emirates, Benji. I'm sorry. I haven't got that first class Amtrak shower experience. I have got the Amtrak sleeper experience or the roomette experience twice, but that didn't come with, or I didn't use the public shower there because I wasn't long enough. I just took a shower when I got off.
You got to get the full bedroom. You got to get the full bedroom with the bathroom.
Where you get the private one.
Although my wife would disagree.
Yeah, I still have my points. In fact, I just got an email from Amtrak. So here's my ongoing saga. I transferred points when Chase lost that partnership, which I want to say was like 5-6 years. It was a long time ago. And I redeemed some of the points, but I have about 60,000 left, which is enough, I think, for like a family bedroom for the right date, because it is based on the cash price of the ticket. But I found dates where I can get it for that. So I still got to do it. But they just emailed me that my points are going to expire. So I need to hit up the portal to spend, to earn a point. So they keep, they don't expire after 3 years of activity, because that was the last time I did anything. I think that Colorado trip where I got stuck coming out of Denver and, it was supposed to be, like 18 hours stuck in the snow in the mountains in May coming out of Denver. That was insane. I haven't been on an Amtrak train since then. So I'll have to change that.
So you're not quite at never again like you were before. Believe it or not, Amtrak does have a shopping portal. That's another option for keeping them alive. But still great value. Obviously, you need to be able to or be interested in riding Amtrak, and you need to have time. And
my big takeaway here is that Amtrak's gourmet food and shower is the same as Emirates' gourmet food and shower. That's Benji's hot takeaway. So I guess we'll leave it at that. Benji, where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
You can find me in the comments section of my articles. I'm sure you hear that a lot, right? That's my primary way to contact me. Or honestly, all joking aside, within Diamond, you can reach me there within our Slack. But that's it. I like not being able to be contacted.
Well, Benji is famously not on social media. Yeah. And there is probably some wisdom in that. Let's just put it that way these days. But that's in the comments. That is the great place. You always respond to comments on your articles. And then, like you said, for anybody in Diamond Slack, you are very visible on the shows and also in the Slack as well. There's nothing wrong with not being on social media. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your insights on hotel status. This was a fun conversation. Everybody go check out the DFW employee store on C2 and say that Benji sent you for some 1930s nostalgia.